This episode of the Deck Tease Podcast is brought to you by Grand Prix Portland. Join Cascade Games and Channel Fireball on August 7th through the 10th for the Team Sealed main event, with $63,000 in prizes, as well as side events firing all 4 days and panels featuring your favorite Magic personalities. Go to gppdx.com for more information. And welcome to episode 95 of The Deck Tease. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest today is a lady planeswalker from Seattle, Washington, who writes about her exploits on her blog called Magic and Realism. She is my friend, Hallie Santo. Hello.
Hey, Erin.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. This was a really great opportunity.
Yeah, it's funny because for those who are listening, this is the M15 spoiler show, which I do every time a new set comes out. And my go-to girl for this is normally my friend Jen from the Genisodes. But Jen had the nerve to have a baby recently. And part of having a baby is you go on like these press tours where you like take your baby to various family members. So she's currently on a press junket for the baby. So she was not able to do a spoiler show.
Yeah.
And I have a close-knit group of friends who I go to whenever I need advice about the show. And I was like, all right, guys, Jen can't do it. Who are we going to get? And they gave me, like, the obvious choices. They were like, you should get Jackie Lee. You should get Melissa DeTora. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, yeah, but I kind of want to give someone else the limelight. You know, who do we love that we just want to – we kind of want to put under the spotlight and give them some time. And then – and literally unanimously, my friends came back with – Hallie Santo. And I was like, Hallie. So I tracked you down like an hour later. We were in a Google Hangout, my friends and I, when we decided it was you. And then I had Facebook message you right away. And I was like, so Hallie, would you be up for coming on my show? And I cringed a little bit. I was like, she's going to say no. She's going to say no. And you were.
I was shocked, honestly, because like, I'm still fairly new to Magic. I've only been playing for about 2 years. And I wasn't expecting something like this to come up this soon, honestly. And it was just really shocking to me that you and that other people wanted me to be on the show. And it was just really humbling. And I'm really glad that people have taken an interest in my Magic career.
Yeah. Yeah. It was me, Adrian, Heather, and I think I ran it past Tibbs as well. And we were all like, and Adrian especially was a big fan of yours. And even when I tweeted that you were coming on, Natasha was like, yay. And people were really excited.
That was really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is going to be a good time. So. So for people who don't know you, Hallie, tell us about you. Who are you? When did you start playing Magic? Fill us in.
Okay, so I started playing Magic about 2 years ago now, around Magic 2013. And at the time, I had just moved to Seattle from New York. So big move, barely knew anyone in Seattle. And the one close friend I had here was a Magic player who had played on the JSS circuit when he was a kid. If you're not familiar, it's the Junior Super Series. It was like a scholarship program for kids who play Magic.
Yeah.
And he used to play competitively and was still playing on and off, but much more casually, and was working more on mentoring other kids who wanted to get into Magic. And like I said, he was one of the few people I knew when I moved here. And I was visiting Seattle just before moving out here. And we had a free evening where we didn't have much to do. And I was just like, hey, why don't you teach me how to play this game that you've been telling me about for like a year now? So he busted out the 2012 core set cards, and we played, and miraculously I beat him, which was weird. And I just enjoyed playing so much that I was like, I wasn't immediately like, oh my God, I have to become the best Magic player in the world. But I thought, okay, like, this is fun. This is something I would like to play again and continue to learn and get better at. And so when I actually moved here, I decided to go to a local game store and buy some Magic cards. And while I was there, someone who worked at the store was telling me about this group called the Lady Planeswalker Society. Mm-hmm. And she was like, it's just a casual group that meets here on Tuesday evenings. It's very beginner friendly, perfect for someone like you. So if you would want to come and join, you know, you would be very welcome here. And I didn't really know anyone in town at the time, so I thought, this is a great way to meet people. So the next Tuesday, I showed up. And I was welcomed by this girl named Jessie, who is like Tifa's BFF. Mm-hmm. She's really great, really generous and welcoming. And she helped me build my deck. And I played in my first tournament and didn't do so well, but had a lot of fun and met some really cool people. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to keep going back. And so I kept going back to LPS. And after a while, it was like I started improving really quickly at playing Magic. And that was partly because I was picking up on the game pretty quickly, and partly because I was talking very regularly with my friend who used to be a competitive player and still had a competitive mindset. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about these higher level Magic concepts like card advantage, and he was teaching me how the stack worked. And all of a sudden I had all of this knowledge that a lot of new players don't have access to. And so I wanted to keep challenging myself and keep building on this knowledge pool. So before I knew it, I was playing Magic like 3 nights a week and meeting a lot of other competitive players in the area who were also very welcoming and were encouraging me to go to PTQs and keep getting better and to test with them. And yeah, that's pretty much how I ended up where I am today.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying your, and you started writing on your blog, Magic mm-hmm. and Realism. Tell me about how the blog got started.
So the blog started because after 2 years of playing Magic, for the first 2 years, I was just kind of a sponge. I was talking to all of these competitive players and absorbing all of this information from them. And after a while, I just kind of felt like I need to start developing my own opinions about Magic, and I need to know that they are my opinions. And I want to also start just chronicling my tournament experiences so that I can look back at them and learn from them and not repeat the same mistakes that I made. So the blog mostly started as just something for me, something to help me improve. And also I'm a writer, always have been, always will be. And I was going through a little bit of a writing slump, and I thought, okay, starting a blog and writing fairly regularly would probably help me get out of that. So I just put all those things together, started blogging. And I thought, this is a project that's just for me. And if it helps other people, you know, if other people read the blog and can learn something from me, then that's great too. And a couple people, like one of the ladies from Lady Planeswalker Society, came up to me recently and said, hey, I'm really enjoying your blog and I've been learning from it. And that was just great for me. I was so happy to hear that I had helped her.
Yeah, usually I try to give you a retweet whenever I see you write, and I always see a couple favorites come up. So people certainly enjoy what you do.
Yeah, I'm really glad. I'm glad that I can also help people with this project.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are your goals? Because I know, do you have any goals? Like you had mentioned that you'd been going to PTQs, and I know that you made the drive to some GPs, or there are some GPs in your future. Like, you know, where do you see yourself going with that?
I'm just reaching for the stars at this point. Like, I would like to be on the Pro Tour. I would like to be in the Pro Tour Hall of Fame eventually. Like, this is something, you know, if possible. Like, this is something that I'm reaching for. But along with that, you know, I have other things going on in my life. Magic is one of many priorities that I have. But one of the main things that I am focusing on as a Magic player is just motivating more women to get into Magic and more women to get into competitive Magic. And that's something that I've tried to do just through my own efforts, through blogging, and through just communicating with other women through Twitter and other social networking places, and just through my involvement with the Lady Planeswalker Society also.
Mm-hmm. Now, what have your experiences been like as a woman in the scene?
It's funny because I know when I started playing, I talked to a bunch of women and heard that they had these negative experiences with, you know, people making sexist comments at tournaments and such. And I haven't really dealt with that much. Like I'm sure I have dealt with a little bit of sexism, but it's been much more subtle. A lot of people, for example, assuming that my boyfriend is a more competitive player than I am, just because of the I don't know, just because of
sure.
norms. But otherwise, I mean, one thing that's funny is I was speaking to Taya Steele, who's a competitive female player from the Seattle area also.
Yeah.
And one thing that she was telling me once was that when you're a woman in the Magic scene, you're much more memorable and much more recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I have noticed, that I do get a lot of attention for a new player. And I think that it's probably because of my gender, because it's so unusual for a woman to be breaking into the competitive scene like I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I've definitely had to sort of scale back on when I see fellow female players doing well. Like, for example, mm-hmm. my friend Janine was at GP Chicago, and she made it all the way to second place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at home, and I was rooting for her, and I was watching the stream. And I was talking to my friend Adrian about it, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of talk about the fact that there hadn't been a lady Magic player who had done that well at a GP in quite a few years.
Yeah.
There were a couple ladies who had made top eight, but that was in 2012, which again was 2 years ago.
Right.
But even then, there hadn't been a woman who made like the finals or who had won one for almost 10 years.
Right.
I believe it was 10 years. And I really had to kind of struggle with that. Like I was really happy for her, but I didn't want it to be like, I was happy for her because she was a lady Magic player and I felt like I could relate to her. And like, that was me up there. And I was sort of living vicariously through her.
Right. I totally felt that way too, just following along at home on Twitter.
Yeah, but at the same time, I had to remember to equally give her credit for her skill. And that was something I kind of caught myself doing because I was so busy going, we got a girl in there, we got a girl in there. And my friend was like, well, she's a great player who got there and happens to be a woman. And
I mean, I read her article on Star City Games, and like she's very familiar with the Mono Black deck. She knows how to play it. She practiced with it. She earned every bit of success that she has.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just have to kind of remind myself, or I have to figure out how to, you know, give out that praise in equal doses, where I definitely want to root for her because she's a woman, but I don't want to root for her so much just for that reason alone.
Absolutely.
So that's tough for me, because I tend to just go all into it, like, woo! Because there are so few of us, so I definitely understand that. So one thing I did want to ask you about, I did a little bit of stalking about on you, Holly Santo, like I do on all of my guests. And you wrote for The Stranger at one point.
Yes, I did.
Anything to do with Dan Savage?
Oh, I never met him.
Okay.
We were never in the office at the same time. He was like a mythical creature.
Okay. Because when I saw The Stranger, I was like, maybe, association, what? All right, so let's go ahead and let's move on a little bit. So what have you been up to lately? Have you gone to any events? Are there any games besides Magic that you're playing? What's up with that?
So I went to, I guess the most recent competitive event I went to was the SCG Open in Portland.
Ooh.
And I wrote about that on my blog also. I didn't do as well as I had hoped, and I made a metagame choice that I thought was pretty solid considering like the field that I was expecting. Like I was expecting to play a lot of mono blue. So I thought, okay, I want to play a control deck, and I want to play a control deck that has access to spells like Keranos and Assemble the Legion, because a lot of the mono black decks are sort of avoiding the splash. And they won't have any access to enchantment removal. So I think like a red, white, blue deck would be solid. I played mono black once. I'd never played mono blue, even though it was very popular at the tournament. And I lost to like my worst matchups, which were the Sly deck, the Burn deck, and Hexproof.
Oof.
So yeah, I still think it, there was a lot of mono blue and a lot of mono black at the tournament. I just never really played against them. So
that sounds like my experience at SCG Milwaukee. They mm-hmm. came to Milwaukee in April, I believe, and kind of the same thing. It's like I was expecting, mm-hmm. I was playing Standard Dredge at the time, and mm-hmm. I was expecting just a nice variety of matchups. I literally played mono black. I played one Standard Dredge mirror, which was very unlikely. Mm-hmm. I played a Maze's End deck, and then I played mono black 4 times.
Oh my god.
Before I dropped at 6. Yeah. I had lost that much. And I was like, I didn't face any control. I didn't face any, you know, burn. I was like, what's going on here? So I get that. You just get those weird matchups.
Yeah. It's happened to me a lot. Like there are a bunch of times where I would make some kind of metagame choice going into a big tournament, whether it was an SCG Open or a PTQ or something like that. And I just never play against the decks that I expect to face. I don't know what's going on with my magic karma.
Are you more of a control player, or what kind of decks do you enjoy playing?
I just like card advantage. Yeah. So naturally I'm a little skewed towards control, and I learned how to play Magic by playing this, it was during Innistrad Return to Ravnica block standard. So I was playing the sort of Restoration Angel, Snapcaster Mage, Thundermaw Hellkite deck.
Sure.
So that's sort of my default. That's what I go back to whenever I'm going to a tournament cold and I'm not sure what to play. I'm like, okay, I can put together a control deck with a couple of threats in it and do reasonably well because I know how this archetype works. But I do like to be more proactive. I play a decent amount of mid-range. I'm not a big aggro player, though I'm getting a little bit better with it now that I've been playing more limited. So I'm really all over the place.
Nothing wrong with that. I admit that I cannot do aggro decks. It's just you put them in my hands and I don't understand. Control decks, I have a really bad habit of playing with my food, where like when I play control, I want to control everything.
Yeah.
And there are times where my friends will be watching the match, and then afterwards they'll be like, you know, you had him over a barrel like 7 turns ago. You could have started, you know, attacking a little more, trying to close out the game. And there are times I don't know when to make that call. I just assume that I have to pin every bit of them down.
It's tough. It's really difficult. And it takes a while, and it takes a while of playing a deck over and over again in different matchups when you learn when is the right time to turn the corner.
Yeah. So that's something I'm not very good at. I tend to do well with more mid-range grindy strategies. I like very attrition kind of matchups where, you know, we're going to go long, I'm going to wear you down, and I'm going to make you work for it. And that's kind of what I like. So
yeah, very Dundee.
Yeah, exactly. So are there any events you're looking forward to besides the pre-release coming up?
The GP in Portland coming up next month, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so when I've been looking at M15, I've been looking at M15 with Team Sealed in mind and looking at what I think some of the best limited cards are. So I'm excited about this set. It's going to be pretty sweet.
Have you ever played Team Sealed before?
Not Team Sealed. I've been playing more Sealed lately. We just came off of a Sealed PTQ season, so I was practicing and playing a lot of Sealed then. And I've done Two-Headed Giant Sealed at a couple of pre-releases, but never Team Sealed.
It's a lot of fun. I did it recently at GP Minneapolis with Mike Linneman and a friend of ours. And the thing I love so much about it is there's this tension because you only need to get, as long as your team gets their 2 wins, you're done.
Uh-huh.
So like, let's say it was you, me, and Tifa, and we're a team. And let's say Tifa goes 2-0 and she beats her person. Mm-hmm. And you go, you know, and you and I are still going and you end up going 2-0. I essentially can stop playing at that point because our team has snagged our 2 wins and we're done. So like, let's say one of you isn't doing so hot. You're just like, okay, I can get this. and it's kind of nice. And there's a little bit of tension there where you're just like, oh, and then, you know, they might get theirs first and you're like, oh, and it's fun. I really like it.
Yeah.
So, do you have your team figured out?
Not yet, actually. There were some people I was planning on being on a team with, but they backed out on me at the last minute. So I'm trying to find more people to be on a team with. Like, I know a bunch of people have sort of like alliances of 2 people figured out and they just need a third. So I'm trying to figure out where I'm going now.
Oh, God. Now I wish I was going because I wouldn't turn you down.
Oh.
I think when I was planning on going, the only person I had snagged was Mike Cannon from Gathering Magic.
Yeah.
One, because he's sort of smexy, and 2, because he's a deck builder, and I am not a deck builder. So I was like, all right, if we're going to be a team of 3, I can pilot. Like, if you give me a deck, I can pilot it like it's nobody's business, but I don't know how to build. So right. He builds, I pilot, and then we have a third. So I wish I would have known that. Uh-huh. I was at the SCG IQ this past weekend. Milwaukee just recently started having IQs. We've never had them before. So it's been a very big deal. I know. We're like living in the dark ages here. So I went to my second or third modern IQ and I was playing Living End, and I ended up going 4-2.
Nice.
Which was nice. The only 2 people that I lost to was a burn deck, which I've recently decided I'm just not really trying anymore. Like burn is just, I'm sorry.
Funny thing is, I played Burn at my very first modern PTQ, and I played against Living End, and I lost because they boarded in Brindlebore against me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing. I guess the problem is like burn, depending on the metagame, like if you're in the online metagame, burn is like 5% of the decks there. So it's very big online. But in paper, it's still like 1 or 2%. So your odds of facing it are very small. And because Modern is such a diverse format, you only have so many sideboard cards to go around. So so it's not that I roll over and die necessarily, but I acknowledge that it's just a bad matchup. And so I ended up losing to burn. I didn't tilt, so I was very proud of myself. I did, however, okay, my opponent was one of those people who liked to talk about his deck afterwards. So, like, after he beat me, he was like, yeah, this deck really comes together because of these cards. And I was like, I'm not interested. Like, I'm really not. And then, like, he paused and he was like, okay, okay. But then there was this card. And I'm like, I'm really not. So if that's tilting, then I tilted. But I did just kind of stress that I don't want to hear about your deck. Like, I lost. Yeah. It is awesome. Good on you, but just I don't want to hear about it. So so I lost to burn, and then I lost to this guy, Owen something, Turtenwild Wald. Right, I mean, some new guy, BDIs, I guess he plays once in a while. So so I was fine losing to those two people, you know, Owen and a burn deck, I can hang with that. I beat Twin, which was great for me. Apparently a turn three slaughter games is great. Nice. And then I've noticed that a lot of Jund decks are coming up through the ranks and a lot of Rock decks, and Living End is fantastic against those decks. So so I beat two of those, and I beat an Affinity player who didn't know that you could sacrifice to Ravager in response to Living End. So I felt kind of bad about it. So like Living End went off and he was like, well, there goes my board. And then once I had won, I was like, may I give you some advice? And he says, sure. And I was like, just so you know, going forward,
you for can next time.
Yeah. And he was a good sport. And I came in on the bubble. I finished 9th.
Cool.
I'm like the Jackie Lee of IQs. You know, she finishes at 11th everywhere. I'm finishing 9th everywhere. So,
well, I heard that you've been having some success with events on Magic Online, though.
Yeah. There was a daily I played in 2 weeks ago. I finished 3-1. And then there was a premiere event where I finished 4th, which I was super happy about. I've never done that well in my life. And I really think it has to do with Modern. You know, I really think it has to do with, you know, Modern is the kind of format where you can play that one deck and you're actually at an advantage if you know that deck inside and out versus Standard, where you play the deck for a while, just when you think you're getting the hang of it, the deck falls out of favor.
Yeah.
And then you're having to switch again. And that's something I think I've really struggled with. So
yeah, I mean, we have a guy in our community who's been playing fairies for months now. And we had a PTQ this last weekend, and he top eighted.
Oh, nice.
With fairies.
Hey.
So yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about playing fairies for a while. Like, it's of the standard decks of Magic's past, it's probably the one that I think I would enjoy playing the most, but regret that I wasn't playing Magic in time to play with. So that's something that I've been interested in playing in Modern, and I've seen LSB do videos with it on Channel Fireball, and it looks like a really fun deck, so I would consider picking it up.
Yeah, it's definitely a deck I worry about. like if I see a spell stutter sprite, I'm like, I'm screwed. but I love Modern as a format. I love, like I said, the fact that you can play that deck. I've been playing Living End since Thanksgiving. So it's really nice to feel like I'm seeing progress, because one of the reasons I was getting so upset with Magic is I felt like I was putting time into it, I was putting money into it, and I wasn't getting anywhere and I wasn't seeing anything. But in this past month, I really feel like I'm seeing something, and I can point to this and say it's working, and that's good for morale.
Yeah, I've been at points like that over the course of my Magic career. Like, I've plateaued at a couple of points. Like, once I got good enough to start doing well at local tournaments, it was like I could only do well at FNMs, and then I would go to larger events and still 0-3 drop or whatever. And then I sort of got over that hump and started doing slightly better at those kinds of events. And it's just a matter of working through things and taking things in stride and getting over each little hurdle.
Yeah. Yeah. So it feels really good. So I'm practicing for GP Boston right now. That's my next big event. And then I get to go to 2 PTQs in August, which is huge for me because PTQs aren't anywhere near me usually, but I have some friends who are willing to take me. So 2 PTQs in August, the World Magic Cup qualifier in August. And then I think my friends are trying to get me to go to Jersey, GP Jersey. But I don't have a legacy deck and I've never really played the format. So I have 3 months to learn legacy. Yeah.
You should play Jund. Jund is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have my friend Charles basically offered to give me a deck. He was like, "You tell me what you want to play, and I'll loan it to you for the event." So, I'm just like, I don't even know the format. I remember my friend Feline Longmore. She gave me a deck at SCG Milwaukee last time she was here. I scrubbed out of the standard portion, obviously, and she's a big Legacy fan. She plays High Tide. She's always
Oh
trying to get
yeah, I've seen
people.
her play. She's awesome.
Isn't she? And so she was trying to get me into Legacy. And I was like, Feline, I don't have a deck. I don't know the format. She goes, I'm going to give you a deck, and you don't even need to know the format. And I'm just like, what kind of deck is this? She goes, it's a Belcher deck.
Oh, nice.
So I'm like, what's a Belcher? So we play a couple practice hands, and I got the hang of it. And you know how SCG has these grinders? So like if it's the day of the standard event, then the grinder is Legacy, and then vice versa the next day. So I played in a Legacy grinder and came up against some really difficult cards, and I think I did like 2-2. But it was fun, but I was just amazed at how powerful the cards were.
And like there are some decks in Legacy where you don't even need to know what you're going up against in order to
Yeah.
play with them well. Like if you practice enough with something like Dredge or Storm, you're basically just playing solitaire and hoping that they don't have hate cards for you.
Yeah, and that the Dredge was actually the deck I was looking at. So I was like, and it's funny because when I tweeted that, a lot of the responses I got back were, so you don't want to know your opponent, you don't care. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then when I started reading up on it, it's like you said, you're basically just playing solitaire. So that's cool. So the reason I asked you here, Hallie, is there's a set coming out called Magic 2015, and I want to talk about it. So this is a big set. I know that we've been saying for a while that, oh, Born of the Gods is going to change standard and Jury is going to change standard. I really think M15 is going to shake up standard. Do you agree?
I hope so, yeah. There are some really neat cards in this set. And one thing that I was thinking about as I was reading it, reading through it, like especially the cards that were designed by the guest designers are doing these wacky things that cards in Magic have never done before. And it almost feels a little bit like Future Sight. Like, they call in these other designers to sort of shake things up and bring their own perspectives. And I'm hoping that maybe Wizards designers will take a look at these cards and think, this worked in M15. Maybe we can apply this to a later set. So you never know.
I think the thing I like the most about the guest designers is how they made cards very reminiscent of the games they designed.
Oh, yeah,
Like
like
for
aggressive
example,
mining.
yeah, Aggressive Mining, that was the guy by one of the guys who worked on Minecraft. Rob Pardo, he made the Rogue, or the Sith Blade, Sly Blade, that
Yeah,
card, which is
the
like a rogue.
hexproof one.
Yeah, which is like a rogue from World of Warcraft, where you figure, her hexproof means that she's stealthed, and then when she comes out of stealth, she gets her first strike and death touch, and I thought that was really cool. I really like the flavor behind those cards. So, what do you think about the? There was a bit of a kerfuffle about the fact that the Penny Arcade guys were chosen, or that there weren't any women included in the designer mix. Like, was that something that bothered you at all?
It was something that I honestly wasn't really reading the designer credits until recently, but I did hear about the kerfuffle, and I feel like Wizards could, I mean I don't know what the process was in selecting these designers, so I don't know that I can I can't really judge too much, but probably more could have been done to diversify the field. Like it wasn't just that there were no women, it was just that they were all white dudes, and that's what people were complaining about. But I don't know. Like there's always more that companies can do to promote diversity. They just have to sort of work at it and look for it.
Absolutely. So there's some noteworthy things about this set that I want to talk about before we get into our personal choices for favorite cards. So first up, we have the Soul Cycle. There is a cycle of six cards, I believe, that correspond to different, I guess,
Planes.
planes. Yeah. So we have a Soul of Zendikar, Innistrad, Chandalar, Ravnica, Pharos, and New Phyrexia. What do you think about the souls?
They're really interesting, and I really like them for limited. Six six for sixes are always good. They have relevant abilities. They're reusable when they go to the graveyard, which is really cool. The one thing I'm unsure of is how they're going to do in standard, first of all, and one of my friends, actually, who has a cube, started proxying these in. And we played with them a little bit. And they were a little bit underwhelming in cube.
Yeah.
And we felt like they were nowhere near as powerful as the Titans. But in M15 Limited, I'm really excited about these. And I think Soul of New Phyrexia is probably going to be... I could definitely see it being a good commander card and possibly being good in standard. I'm not sure if there's a ramp strategy that can take advantage of it.
I could see Soul of New Phyrexia being good in a lot of the Nykthos decks, specifically things like Mono Green or, you know, things like Constellation, where you really have to have this huge board state. And unfortunately, something like a Supreme Verdict can just wipe your whole game plan away. So, you know, being able to generate a ton of mana to get that thing out and then have enough mana to protect your stuff, I can see it having a home there.
Yeah, definitely.
I think the other thing you mentioned, which is very interesting, is the fact that they keep getting compared to the Titans, which I think is bound to happen. But I think part of the problem is when people... The Titans are so good, and those are really big shoes to fill. And I feel like when people do that, they're never going to live up to the Titans. Like, I think they're just things... I think they're best appreciated for what they are. Because remember, in the Ravnica block, we had the Primordials. And people were like, Sylvan Primordials, the new Primeval. No.
not really.
And those didn't live up to expectations either. So I think by themselves, you know, like you said, you listed a lot of really good traits that they have. They're good for what they are. But, you know, when you put them up against those huge expectations of the Titans, they just don't stand a chance. So.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm drafting M15 and I open one of these, I'll definitely pack one, pick one. Take one of them, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So Convoke is back. That was a mechanic from the original Ravnica block, I believe.
Yep, the Selesnya one, yeah.
And Slivers are back. And people were really excited about this because Slivers kind of were a whimper in M14.
Right.
What do you think about those two things?
So Convoke is really awesome, and I'm very glad that Court of Calling is getting reprinted. It's a great card in Modern that I think a lot of players wanted access to, and it was sort of hard to find and kind of expensive. So I'm glad that they're putting more Cards of Calling into circulation and that more people who want to get into Modern can get access to it, just like they did with Thoughtseize, with reprinting it in Theros.
Yeah.
The one concern I have about Convoke is that I guess one general statement I can make about M15 is that it seems like it has a higher learning curve than other core sets that we've seen in years past. When you look at these cards, they're very niche. They have a lot of text on them. They have a lot of sort of obscure abilities. And Convoke is one of those cards where it's one of those abilities that is going to be very difficult to illustrate to a new player.
Sure.
And like I teach at conventions a lot with the Lady Planeswalker Society, and it's hard enough for me to explain to someone how instant speed and sorcery speed are different and how summoning sickness works, that when you throw Convoke in there, it's going to confuse some people. And I'm just like imagining the person who's sitting across from me at the booth in the convention saying, wait, like, can I do this on my turn or your turn? Or like, this creature has summoning sickness. Can I tap this one? But I think the reminder text does a good job of explaining it. And the reminder text is adorable.
Yeah.
Like, your creatures can help cast this spell. Like, that's just such a cute image.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I know, I've been playing for quite a while, but I wasn't around for the original Ravnica. And even I had to reread those cards pretty closely because there were a couple cards that have Convoke that I think I might like. And even now, it's like, you know, I think if I were at the pre-release, and pre-releases are great for sort of working out the kinks of what mechanics do, but, you know, if I start, you know, if I put cards in my deck with Convoke, I'm going to be the one that's slowly like, tap one, tap two. Am I doing this? Okay, untap one. You know, I can't even say I'm confident that I know what it does. So I agree.
Yeah, I've never played with Convoke before.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a new experience for me too.
I think the other thing that's confusing is that some cards have base power and toughness.
Yeah.
That's been another thing that even the judges are like, what is this? Why do we? What?
They're just sort of scratching their heads.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Are they going to like erratic humility now? What's going on with that?
I don't know, but I remember humility. Oh, you went back in the vault for that one.
Well, the funny thing was, while I was at the SCG Open, I was watching one of my friends play a round of Legacy, And there was a humility in play, and there was also a batter skull in play with a germ token on it. And he had to remind his opponent that the germ token was a 5-5,
yeah,
because humility was making it a 1-1 instead of a 0-0 with a batter skull equipped on it. So it was just fresh in my mind.
So what do you think about Slivers? Are you excited for them? Do you think they're finally going to see standard play?
I am excited for Slivers, just on behalf of the casual players. Like, this is a set that has done a lot to reward the enfranchised players, competitive and casual alike. And I know a lot of casual players who are excited about Sliver Hive and Sliver Hive Lord. I am a little concerned about just the lack of Sliver creatures in this set as opposed to M14. Where, like, when you played M14, Slivers was a draftable archetype. You could do, like, Naya Slivers. In this set, you just have five of them, and it seems like they're sort of there to augment the Slivers that are already in Standard. So, like, you can't exactly go into M15 and be like, I'm doing Slivers, because they're all uncommons and they're all different colors. Mm-hmm. But they are pretty interesting. Like, Diffusion Sliver is really cool. It's not exactly hexproof, but it's really interesting. And Sliver Hive is a really nice card for those people who have their Sliver Queen and Sliver Overlord Commander decks.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you one of those people who doesn't like your Slivers to have legs? Are you picky about that?
I'm not picky about my Slivers.
Okay.
I don't really have a history with Slivers. I know a lot of players do. I'm not picky about my Slivers. They looked a little weird last year. I was kind of like, why do you have so many claws? Like, why do you look like a Cylon? What's going on here? But
Cylon, you nerd.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, the Slivers have returned to their original form, and yet the Sliver tokens are the same tokens that were being used last year.
Right.
So something is afoot here.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I love Slivers. I've always had a big great appreciation for them. I think a Sliver, I had Sliver Queen back in the day. I had multiple Sliver Queens back in the day, back when they first came out. I would love for them to be a thing. I would like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about Slivers, and you mentioned like their capacity in Sealed. I remember we talked about Team Sealed. I played Team Sealed M14, and there was always one person in every Team Sealed team that was the Sliver person. Because you opened so many Slivers, you would just be like, all right, you're Sliver guy, you're Sliver girl, and we'll just do our thing. And that was cool. But I don't think we can do that this time around. So the set seems to revolve around, okay, here we go. Do you say Garruk or Garruk?
I say Garruk.
Garruk, me too. Okay, apparently it's Garruk.
I don't know.
I'm okay with it either way, but I know some people are going to be like, it's pronounced wrong. So the set revolves around Garruk, and he's gone bad. He's killing folks. He's a big part of the storyline. People were correct in that he's going to be black and green. What do you think about Garruk going bad?
I don't know. I don't really follow the Magic storyline that much, but the card is pretty sweet. And I'm excited about it.
I think a lot of people are dismissing the card too easily. Because if you remember when Elsbeth came out, 6 mana is too much. Who's going to use this? And now
she came out and she had two ways to protect herself that were both really relevant. And Garruk has 3 ways to protect himself.
Yeah.
So
I think Garruk's going to make an amazing finisher. So I'm really excited for that. And I think I really like the promotion for the pre-release where, like, you can fight Garruk. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that's cute. Yeah.
Are you going to be posing with the cutout?
That would be really awkward because the cutout is apparently 8 feet tall and I'm a tiny person. I'm only 5'2" or like 5'1.5". So there's going to be a lot of white space between my head and Garruk's head.
Maybe you could do like you see sometimes some small children do when they like cling to someone's leg and the person walks away and they're still holding on to their leg. Maybe you could like just wrap yourself around Garruk's leg. Like, no, Garruk. And
don't come back.
See? It'd be fantastic.
I'll have to start, I'll have to start practicing.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. I was like, what would I do? And I couldn't really come up with anything. So, but if you win, if you take that picture and you win, you better remember me. And
okay.
Just saying. So now my favorite part of these spoiler shows is I always like to talk about what cards we're excited about. So let's go through each color and we'll talk about the one or two cards that we are most looking forward to. So you start, and let's start off with white.
Okay, so the card I'm most excited for with white is the Hushwing Griff.
Me too.
Which is the Torpor Orb bird.
Yeah.
And that's a card that I definitely want to try to play in Modern at some point. Because it seems good against Pod, seems good against Twin. It's just, it might even be playable in Legacy in like a Death and Taxes style deck. Like, I could see it having a lot of applications in a lot of different formats.
Yeah.
And that's something I look for when I look at these new cards.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that card as well because I play Living End. And the golden rule of Living End is you cannot play anything that costs less than three. Converted mana costs three. Because otherwise you run the risk of cascading into it. So we've never been able to use Torpor Orb. So the idea that this costs three, it's a creature, I can hang with that. If this is something I would sideboard in, that was the first thing that jumped out to me. And yeah, I love that card. So the other card I was excited about, because I always choose a backup because Jen always steals mine because she's hateful. Devouring Light.
Which one is that?
That is the one colorless and two white, and it's a Convoke instant, and you can exile an attacking or blocking creature.
Yeah, that one's pretty cool. That's something I could definitely see myself playing in Limited.
Yeah.
It requires like a certain situation. It's kind of like Divine Verdict in Theros Limited. But definitely an inclusion, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, exile is the new dead. I mean, so, you know, why deal with killing something where you just get rid, go? I don't want to look at you. Ouch! Exile. Big fan of that.
Yeah.
So the next color you are excited about, I'm excited about blue.
Yeah.
What's your...
So I have two ideas for blue. The first one was Aether Spouts. Mm. Or Aether Spouts, I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Either or.
So that's something I'm really excited about, potentially opening in, M15 Limited, because the ability to tuck multiple attackers is something that I don't think we've seen before, and that seems really intriguing to me.
It reminds me of Terminus a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It looks really good. And the other card that I'm excited for, which is kind of an odd pick, and very specific to me, is Dissipate.
Mm.
I'm just really glad that that's being reprinted because I was just having a conversation with a friend a couple of days ago about Dissipate versus Dissolve, which is the one blue-blue counterspell that's in standard now. And even though Dissolve is a great counterspell and the Scry ability is really relevant, there are times when I'm playing the control deck and my opponent ghost rides the whip on me.
Mm.
By which I mean they try to cast an Obsidot, I counter it, they have a whip in play, and they whip it back, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
Like, if I have a Syncopate in my hand, they have the mana to pay for it, and I just have to go with the Dissolve, and it goes in their graveyard, and before I know it, it's back on the field again.
Yeah.
And I just keep thinking, like, Dissolve is a great counterspell, but if I only had Dissipate, like, this would not be happening right now.
Mm, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Especially with the Souls possibly becoming a thing, it's a great way to stop those, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I know Dredge pops up every once in a while, standard Dredge, that can shoot that in the foot too. You're right. You're absolutely right. So my first choice was Aether Spouts, which you took, Hallie.
Sorry.
Jesus. you've been talking to Jen, haven't you? But I have a backup. My backup is the Polymorphous Jest. It's so janky.
Is that the turns things into frogs?
Yes, that is where it's an instant. It costs one and two blue. Until end of turn, each creature target player controls loses all abilities and becomes a blue frog with base power and status 1/1. I want to Golgari Charm that so bad. I just think it looks like so much fun. I don't even play blue normally, but I would do something with that. That looks like a blast. And I want to see, have you seen the frog tokens?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I haven't either, but I hope they're cute because all the frogs on the artwork are adorable.
They are. And so we have that. We have Turn to Frog, which is coming back. Lots of frogs in this set.
I'm excited. All right. So this brings us to black. What is your black choice?
I was having a difficult time with black because there were a bunch of cards where I was thinking, like, this card is okay, but I don't see myself playing it. I do think Indulgent Tormentor is definitely my favorite of the pre-release promos. And it's the one I'm most excited to play, and it reminds me a lot of, oh god, I can't even think of the name of it. could you pause for a second while I look this up on Gatherer?
Absolutely.
I'm trying to think of, oh, it's Blood Gift Demon. That's what it is.
Okay.
It reminds me of Blood Gift Demon, which is a card that I've played in, I've played in Commander, I've played in, like, casual formats a lot, and, I've enjoyed it, and it's good to see that coming back.
Yeah. My choice was Waste Not. I am one of the few people who's very much looking forward to that card.
There are a couple people I've talked to who are looking forward to Waste Not.
Yeah, my friend Natalia seems to think that that card could make 8-rack, like Tier 1, Tier 1.5, and Modern. It could really kind of make it better. So I'm excited about that card. And then the other card I'm excited about is Obnixilis. Only because it's one of those cards where I'm looking at it and I'm wondering if there's any sort of foresight there where it's like, oh, how often are we really going to be searching our... Oh, wait.
Yeah, I had that thought too.
Yeah, where it's like, are we going to be searching our library? Like, is that coming? And that made me a little excited where I was like, oh, okay, this means something. And then sometimes you can see that with cards where you're like, this, we're going to need this, aren't we? So I'm excited for that card.
Yeah.
On a side note, I was really surprised by how many people are excited about Stab Wound. It's an uncommon now.
Yeah, I'm excited about Stab Wound just for limited.
Yeah.
Because it's a win condition in limited.
Yeah.
Like, I remember this was my first time drafting Return to Ravnica sealed. My first time drafting Return to Ravnica, I played against Tifa, and she stab wounded one of my creatures. And I ended up losing because I had like just started playing Magic, and it didn't occur to me for whatever reason that I could just block one of her attackers with my stab wounded creature and just get rid of it.
Yeah.
But there were just so many other things going on in my mind at the time because I was still sort of getting the hang of all the mechanics that I ended up losing because of that card. And there are plenty of situations where you will put a stab wound on a creature and your opponent just won't have a way of getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. So
it's also one of those cards that I feel like it's very easy to miss the triggers.
Yeah.
It is one of those cards that just sort of gets lost in the board.
Mm-hmm.
Red...
Let's see, what did I have for red? I actually liked Goblin Rabble Master.
Did you?
That one looks pretty solid, and I know there are some people who have been sort of tooling around with Modern Goblins lists, and this was a card that served a kind of Goblin Pile Driver-like role, but is also Modern legal, and I'm wondering if this card might push the Goblins deck a little bit.
I actually lost to a Goblin deck at GP Minneapolis. I was terribly ashamed, but it was one of the last rounds of the day, and he was playing Goblin King, Blood Moon, and then a bunch of other Goblins, which Blood Moon is devastating enough in Modern, but when you pair that up with Goblins that have Mountain Walk, it just gets really ugly. So I think the tools are there. I think you're right. This could be what they need, and that's scary to think about.
Yeah.
I actually chose Act on Impulse.
That was my second choice.
Yeah, I've recently had the revelation that I am a Chandra. I like to pretend that I'm a Liliana and that I'm sexy and mysterious, or I pretend that I'm a Vraska. I really am a Chandra. I'm just a hothead. I own it. I just bought the Chandra, the vinyl toy, the little Funko. She's looking at me right now. I'm a
Chandra. We got this too. Yeah, we got the Ajani and the Garrick.
Yeah, so I've recently come to grips with that, and I love the artwork. I love the close-up of her face. I love the goggles. I love that they are doing things with red that haven't really been done before. Like, this is sort of red's card advantage now, and I think that's awesome. I think that's – I like seeing colors, you know, do things that we don't normally think for them to do. So.
Right.
So I think that's fantastic. The other card I'm kind of excited about is Aggressive Mining. Yeah, that's one of those where I wouldn't rule it out, where it looks kind of goofy, but someone's going to do something with that.
Right, like speaking of card advantage for red, this is a way to get it.
Yeah, especially like if you're playing a control deck and you're already at like 11 lands, and you're just like, I think I'm okay for now, and you can afford to pitch a couple, and I could see it.
Yeah, like if you have like a red devotion deck, and you have a Nykthos in play, and you have all of these lands. It's like, well, I don't need these. Might as well pitch some and draw more cards that affect the board.
Absolutely. That's another great use. So. Mm-hmm. Green.
I had too many choices for green.
Green is good.
Green is really good. Yeah. I really like Nissa, though.
Yeah?
Nyssa is sweet, and I have a story about Nyssa.
Tell me the story.
I don't know if you saw this exchange on Twitter, but when I saw Nyssa, I thought, this is a Tifa card. Because Tifa is the quintessential mono green player.
Oh, yeah.
She plays mono green in standard whenever she can. Her commander deck is Omnath, Locus of Mana. She just loves stomping face with green creatures. So I saw Nyssa, and I saw that she makes lands into creatures. She untaps lands so you can ramp. And I was like, this is such a Tifa card. So I tweeted something to the extent of, just looked at the spoilers, saw Nyssa, and thought, well, this is a Tifa card. And Tifa tweets back at me and says, I helped develop that card. I was just like, of course you did.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just happy to see a good Nyssa, because the other one was so narrow.
Yeah.
And this one I think is going to be good. Did you happen to see the controversy over the artwork?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, apparently there was a kerfuffle on Twitter. I don't know if there was a photographer or a painter, but supposedly there's some other piece of art out there not related to magic, just related to like fantasy art, that happens to look a lot like Nyssa. It's like a white-haired elf. It's a profile. The pose is very similar. And there was some talk on Twitter or on Reddit about how close it was and whether or not it could be seen as plagiarism or things like that. So if you get a second, take a look at that. Not necessarily right now, but some point, just take a look at that and then let me know your thoughts on that, because I didn't think it was a big deal, but there were some people that were really upset about it and how could this happen and all that stuff. My choice is Life's Legacy. I was playing the Rock pre-rotation with Giraffe's Messenger, Thrag Tusk, Mutilate, or whatever. And one of the cards in there was Disciple of Bolas, which I did not appreciate until it was too late. And when I look at Life's Legacy, I remember Disciple of Bolas. And I can't have Disciple back, but, you know, being able to do, you know, you're playing a Desecration Demon and you're like, declare attack, or you're going into combat, and then they sacrifice a creature thinking they tapped your demon down, and then you're like, oh, sack demon for 7 cards. And seeing the look on your opponent's face, they're like, that's kind of not fair. So that makes me think of the joy that I felt when I did that. And then my backup choice is Hornet's Nest.
that's a really flavorful one.
That card is hilarious.
Yeah.
And I love that Mark Rosewater does not like the Hornets at all. He was talking about Hornet Queen and Hornet Nest, and he was just not having it. So I love that that's a little something that riles him, which is cool.
I'm just glad that we have a Back to Nature reprint.
That was actually a card I want to talk about a little later. But yeah, that's a card that surprised me. I have to say, I wasn't expecting it to be there. So
yeah, it's really going to mess things up for Hexproof.
But it deserves to be best up. I mean, it's Hexproof. Come on. You can't show them any sort of compassion. You just can't, you know? Did you have any favorite artifacts?
Let's see. I need to scroll down to the artifacts. I did like Soul of New Phyrexia, but we already mentioned that. I think Perilous Vault is a good card for casual formats and might see some play in standard. It's a little expensive, with the base cost and the activation cost, but I could see it seeing some fringe play. As far as other artifacts go, I'm not sure. Nothing I'm too excited about.
You weren't excited about the Chain Veil?
The Chain Veil, I don't know. Like, it's such a niche card.
Yeah.
And it requires you to have a lot of, it requires you to have planeswalkers in your deck, and it feels almost a little bit win more to me. Mm-hmm. Like if you're activating abilities of planeswalkers, then the planeswalkers are affecting the board and protecting themselves. And that's great. And it almost feels like overkill to me.
Sure. I was surprised they brought Haunted Platemail back. That's one of those cards that I wish saw more play. So I'm hoping that that picks up more. And I think it could be something in control decks. Maybe the new Aetherling. I don't know. But
I don't know. I just really liked it in M14 Limited. So I'm excited to have it back in this Limited.
Yeah.
This Limited.
And our friend Gavin Verhey designed that, I think.
Yep, he did.
Yeah, love him. So Phyrexian Revoker is back. I think that's our new Pithing Needle.
Mm-hmm.
And that Scuttling Doom Engine is scary.
It's really scary. One of my friends is obsessed with that card.
Yeah.
And he has gone so far as to change his name on Twitter to Scuttling Doom Engine. and just start randomly tweeting the hashtag Scuttling Doom Engine.
Oh my.
Yeah.
That was a card I was talking to some people on Twitter about, and Chris Van Meter chimed in, and he was like, you know, I can't wait for Desecration Demon to ask me to sacrifice something, and then I sacrifice it and do six to their head. I was like, oh, that's
cool. Yeah. That's a great application for that card.
My favorite card was actually the Profane Memento.
I like the art for that card a lot.
Yeah, that's a very scary looking card, and it has sort of like that blood artist-y effect, which I love. I was pre-rotation there was the Aristocrats, which looked like a lot of fun, but I was so invested in Jund that I couldn't really shift to try something else. But I feel like between Cartel Aristocrat and Athreos, like maybe there's some sackness going on, and maybe that could be something. And but that's the opponent's graveyard. I don't know, but that's one of those cards I see something there. I just don't know what it is. The other card that I chose, just because it's so freaking funny, is Meteorite. Like the quote alone is, and if I'm lying, and then the meteor just hits them, like I think that's really funny. Kind of morbid like that. So one category that I like to have on my spoiler episodes is the what the fuck card, where it's either a card you don't understand, a card you don't know why it's here. Do you have a what the fuck card, Hallie?
I have a couple what the fuck
cards. Hit me with them.
Okay, so one of them is the Scissors Monster in Soul Artifact. Mostly because of the art, because it's so wacky. But it's mostly because I'm just looking at this card and thinking, what am I going to do with this? And like, I talked to a friend about it, and he was like, well, if you put it on a Darksteel Citadel, then it's a 5/5 indestructible, and that's pretty awesome. And I was like, but that's so much setup.
Yeah.
You're putting it on a land and using, like, if you tap it, you're tapping an island and a Darksteel Citadel to put it on your Darksteel Citadel, and now it can't attack or block, so what are you doing with it? Like, it's, I don't know. It's, I don't know what to make of this card. It's really weird.
No, I agree with you.
And the other one I had was Goblin Kaboomist. Which reminded me of a little card from Dragon's Maze called Goblin Test Pilot.
Yeah.
Which was the O2 that deals 2 damage to something. Like, it could be you, it could be your opponent, it could be a creature on the battlefield, or it could be itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never know where it's going to go. And this kind of reminded me of that, but even more involved. Like, there's just so much text on this card. Like, at the beginning of your upkeep, put a colorless artifact token named Landmine onto the battlefield. And that token has red, sacrifice this artifact. This artifact deals 2 damage to target attacking creature, but it has to be a creature that doesn't have flying.
Right.
And then you flip a coin. And if you lose the flip, it deals 2 damage to itself. Like, there's so much going on this card.
Yeah.
And it's also only a 1/2 for 2.
Yeah.
So it's... There's just so much here, and I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, and if you lose one flip, it's dead.
Yeah.
But you could, like, live the dream and put that indestructibility enchantment on it, and then just rah! Telling you.
You can get a landmine token, and instead of sacrificing it, you could put in Soul Artifact on it, and suddenly...
See? Hallie, you know what's up. I'm going to see you in a deck text in 6 months from now. You know, we have Hallie Sanjo with her top 8 Goblin Mind deck. And I'm like, I told her I knew it. See? I'm telling you. So my what the fuck card was one you already talked about. Back to Nature. I was somebody, and I know you experimented with this for a little while too, was the Constellation deck. I know so many people that want that deck to work, and this card just single-handedly kind of pisses on it, where, you know, all right, you've got your whole board, you got your Eidolons, you got your Doomwakes, you pay one and a green and they're all dead. Like, that's a bit soul-crushing. But I do agree with you. I don't really like ban hexproof or hexproof decks, so I'm a big fan of those being affected by this, but I'm very sad that Constellation may not become a thing. So now, what are your plans for the pre-release? Are you somebody who goes all weekend long? Like, what are you thinking?
So I used to be someone who went all weekend long. Like, when I did the Gatecrash pre-release, I went to 6 of them. And I live tweeted it, and it was kind of a thing. But after that, I went to the Dragon's Maze one, and I just wore myself out so much. Like, I practically made myself sick just, like, staying up all night playing Magic. And so I don't do that anymore. I usually go to 3 or 4 for the expert sets, or like the block sets, and I usually go to 2 for the core sets. So I'm gonna be doing one on Saturday morning and one on Sunday morning this weekend.
Nice. So do you have any closing thoughts on M15 that you'd like to share?
I think it's a really exciting set. I think it has a lot to offer to a lot of different types of players, and I'm really excited to play Team Sealed with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited for that, too. I always like to do the two-headed giant. I usually do, I tried doing what you did, where you do the multiple pre-releases. And one of my local game stores even has something called a stamina event, where, like, you know, if you sign up for so many pre-releases, you get one more event. And for every round you make it through, you get, like, a pack. And, you know, I can just imagine people all coffeeed up trying to get through that stamina event. I just can't do that anymore. So I'm kind of like you, where I will go to F&M like normal on Friday. Saturday morning, I go to an event. And it's 5 rounds, and then Sunday is 5 rounds, and that's it for me, and then that's enough.
Yeah.
So, well, it has been lovely having you on the show and going through M15 with me. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. And if people have enjoyed listening to you on the show, Hallie, where can they find you? Where can they find your blog? How can they get a hold of you?
So I'm on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. And my blog is magicandrealism.tumblr.com.
Okay. And what does HalCanSan stand for?
They're the first 3 letters of my first, middle, and last name. So my full name is Hallie Candace Santo.
Candace.
Yeah. My mom was apparently watching a lot of Murphy Brown while she was pregnant. And she wanted to name me after her great-grandfather, whose name was Charlie, so she needed a C name, and she was just like, Candace, there we go.
That's a cool name. And Murphy Brown is a feminist icon. I mean, come on. So definitely not a bad choice. Well, like I said, I love your blog. I read it. I try to plug it whenever I can. I encourage everyone else to go read it, and I think you're doing a lot of good here, so please keep doing what you do.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And if anyone else has enjoyed what they've heard here on the show, you can find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The Deck Tease is also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at The Deck Tease. You can keep up with me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can also email me personally at Estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Enjoy your M15 and take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.